Okay. That's, yeah. Yeah, that's, do you want to just start from the very beginning? We're here with Shannon. Yeah, let's just do that. Hi, Blair. It's great to be with you. Thanks, Blair. Yeah, I'd love to. It's interesting, grieving well or talking about grief isn't like this really happy, joyful subject, but it's one I've become really familiar with the last couple of years. And I'm learning that it's the practice of grieving well, which is probably informing my leadership more than anything. And I feel like I'm just learning a lot from the practice of grieving well. So you asked me to talk about Matryoshka House and Rooted Good, which are two organizations that I've been part of starting. Matryoshka House really, in so many ways, emerged, but was an organization that I founded in 2004 after I moved to the UK. So I'm based in London, but I'm from Texas. And having had a career in business and then working as a church planter in Texas, I found I was in need of a context that would help me experiment my way into the future of what it meant to be church and what it meant to build Christian community. And so Matryoshka House really was the manifestation of that. Of all the questions I was asking back in the early 2000s, what does it look like to be church? What does it look like to do the good work of the gospel in our context? What does it mean to find new economic models? And so for 15 years, I led Matryoshka House. It was part community. We grew a missional community out of 15 projects that we launched. We launched social enterprises, social justice projects. We campaigned on against the demand side of human trafficking and change legislation. We worked with women that were homeless, teaching them to repurpose jewelry. We developed tools, including tools for measuring your impact. It was just this really prolific organization that was so many things to me and really changed my life and helped me work out my faith in new ways. And had a lot of success. We were growing. We really were pioneering in both the US and the UK. And from the outside, it looked like nothing could stop us in a lot of ways, right? Like it, we were doing the work we wanted to do, but over time, we realized that we were working harder and harder and harder, and it wasn't feeling very resilient. And so in 2017, we met with a lot of consultants, to be honest, and everyone kept saying, "You guys are all entrepreneurs. You're all creatives. You really need to like find a managing partner." And so we went through the process of what would it look like to have someone come in and help us, like go to the next level, and to build for sustainability. And that process, so we did bring someone on and we started this long process of what did the work need to be now that it wasn't emerging anymore in some ways that it had emerged. And interesting, it was through going through that process that we realized we had to take it apart. And that the work really wasn't sustainable. We realized we had like six business models going on. We were operating in two countries. We had nine people on payroll. It was just a lot. And we needed to, we just needed to take it apart and find the distinctive through thread. And at the beginning, we still thought we were going to build for it to all exist together, the work in the US and the UK. But through a series of events, we took it apart and we took all of the work and spun it into three new entities, two in the UK and one in the US, which became Rooted Good. And, you know, we did this at the end of 2019. It was all official to the missional community, to our partners globally. And we did this amazing ceremony and we launched. And I was so excited because the work in the US became very defined and clear, and it was geographically bound. And it's like, okay, now we can run, we can focus, we can have a team that focuses on the work in the US and the work around impact measurement in the impact investing sector. It was really clear the team that was most passionate about that work in the UK could run, they could give sole attention to that work. And the same, the work supporting people on the ground in the UK to launch ventures, which became Good Makers Society, it could just focus and do that work. And I'm a 3 on the Enneagram, so there's a way to tell this story that looks and sounds really successful, and it is, partly. But the other part was we let something die. Like, what Matryoshka House was no longer exist. And, you know, that happened just before the pandemic. But it was amazing because then the pandemic happened, Rooted Good launched, Good Makers launched, the TI became the Curiosity Society, and everyone had runway, everyone had security. But I was faced with, what did I just do? I just let go of this thing that I felt like was my life work. And so the beginning of the pandemic really was one of grief and loss for me, as well as celebration and success. Like, for the first time in 16 years, I didn't wake up every morning thinking, how are we going to fund the work? And is everyone going to be okay? Everyone was safe. Everyone was secure. Everyone was doing the work they were called to do. But I don't know. For me, it was also a season of grief. Anyway, that's a really long answer and talks much more about Matryoshka House. But I think one thing that I've come to really ponder, you know, and I don't know if it's where we are in history or being American, is why we focus so much on everything has to grow. Everything has to grow. Everything has to stay alive. When, as Christians, we believe in a gospel of death and resurrection. So I feel like we need to figure out how to get better at letting things end well. So anyway, I don't know. Is that what you? Yeah, it's a great question. I think that, well, we couldn't have done the work to let go without going back to purpose. So I would say that. I think the interesting thing, you know, I actually feel sorry for the person that like led us through the process at times, because, you know, he forced us to slow down and to go back to why were we doing all the things we were doing. And were the things that we were doing actually achieving the impact we wanted to have? There was a lot of good happening, and we could have just kept going. And again, that's the bit about, you can look really busy and really active and really impactful, but is it really the good that you exist to do is another question, right? And so I think by paying attention to purpose, it then you can go, okay, well, how do we fulfill our purpose? And what do we need to stop doing in order to start doing the things we really want to and need to do in this moment? I don't know if I'm answering your question, but Well, I think the first thing you have to do is you have to stop. And so you have to slow down and you have to stop. So, you know, Andy Root talks a lot about how even the focus on innovation and doing all these new things, it's making us move too fast. It's everything's accelerating. We're all about the new, but actually we have to pause. We have to stop. We have to slow down. And you can't do grief if you don't do that. You can't, right? And, so I don't know. I think that's the first thing. And I think leaders have to hold the nerve, right? Like, I think as leaders, you have to hold the nerve to go slower, right? To pause, to stop. The other thing I've been thinking about a little bit this morning, I haven't thought about this book in a long time, but in preparation of today, I was thinking about Lauren Winter's book, Mudhouse Sabbath. Have you read that? So for people that haven't, this is a book, and it's basically a spiritual practices book. And she talks about practices that are both Christian and Jewish, but quite frankly, Jews do them better. That's what she says. And one of the chapters in there is about mourning. And I was thinking about how when we really do grief work, we actually need ritual to help us do grief work. So, you know, I remember when my father died, you know, I was so grateful for like the pastor of the church and the funeral home, because they help you like do the grief work, right? They give you some rituals, they lead you through a process. And I think one of the things that surprised me is I knew when we were making these decisions with Matryoshka House in the last few months, it was hard work. I talk about it as the hardest work I've ever done in my life. I think some of that's because I'm a three. I really was struggling. But I felt like I had to help everyone go through the process. So a lot of people around me, a lot of people in the community, we're feeling the loss, and I didn't feel it till later in a lot of ways. But I think we created rituals to help people pay attention to what was happening. And so I think you have to stop, you have to reflect, and then I think you have to do some of those practices that help us find resonance in that moment, right? That help us do the spiritual work. I don't know. Again, I don't know if I'm really hitting the nail on the head. I think the other thing is, if we do that, if we pay attention and we do some of that work, it gives us hope for the resurrection part, right? It's so, Nate Stuckey, who's at the Farminary, I was with him once when he did an activity where he made people put their ideas in a compost pile, like the ideas that they were letting go of that they knew were not for now, because they would come back with a sense they'd come back in another time, right? That's another way of doing grief work, right? So, and I do wonder if this is one of the most unique opportunities in history, maybe not history, but maybe in the last 50 years for the church, both in as our own organizations are needing to go through renewal. Some of them need to die. Some of them need to find a new way forward, right? But also we're experiencing death culturally in society, not just there's been a large physical loss of life through COVID, but also a lot of, you know, death of the way society is structured, right? Even like the ways of working are changing. But I think this is a time when society needs ritual. And can we find some ways to help people do the grief work? Anyway, I don't know. I could go on and on about this, but yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting. So one of the things that surprised me when my dad died, I haven't thought about this in a long time, is how tired I was. And I kept hearing everyone go, grief makes you really tired. And I wonder if it's like, that's part of like why you have to slow down to do some of the work of grief. Anyway, I don't know. I feel like I've got a few little thoughts to go with that. But I think if we don't do the work of grief, it will come out another way. And I think whether that leads us to toxic, you know, unhealthy organizations and communities, we don't need more of that, right? If it damages our interpersonal relationships, right? If we don't do the grief work. And you know, and then I think the process for a leader is different than the process for a community. And I think that's it. I would say there was a lot of pain when we were making the decisions we made, but I knew they were the right things to do. And so then you have to lead well. But then, you know, you also need time to, okay, what just happened? What just happened? What did we just go through? Now, there's some people writing in business right now about the collective trauma of leadership, of leading during COVID, which I'm super fascinated about what that's going to show. And anyway, that's a tangent, but. I think, well, I do think that I had to go through the grief. I think I had to do that personally. And it is self-care, but it's also, where's God leading me? I feel like there was a personal bit of like, how did I process and make sense of having taken apart something I'd given 15 years of my life to build? And I was expecting when we started the process that I'd be spending the next 15 years, right? And so I think there was an invitation from the Lord to me, honestly, that was, do I want to go somewhere new? And really, one of the things that had come out of the Matryoshka House process was, you know, it we weren't, because we were working harder and not getting further, more sustainable, things had to change. It actually was for our own health, resilience, right? So anyway, but for me, and again, because it would have been easy as a 3 on the Enneagram to just talk about this success. There aren't many emerging churches, missional communities, fresh expression, whatever you want to call what we were, that sustained for 15 years and then spun out 3 organizations that all have a life of their own and could all stand on their own 2 feet without me. I mean, that was, and that is work I'm proud of, but I could have focused on that and not paid attention to the loss. And so I did get a new spiritual director because I knew I couldn't do the work alone, and I knew I wouldn't do the work alone. And then I think the pandemic helped because it made me stop. So I quit traveling, right? So the providence of God did not escape me in a lot of ways, like that we did this work at a time, you know. And one of the things that was really interesting was we separated. The first thing we did was we separated geographically. Well, you know, we just wouldn't have, I wonder if we would do that again. You know, like the timing made all the difference, right? So, but I do think there are 2 parts to the grief work. And one is leading people and leading communities through change, letting things go, stopping, letting things go. And all of it, you know, the rest of that article talks about, you know, it's in order to go back to purpose. It's in order for, you know, reimagined practice. And that's the invitation, you know, personally for me, Blair, is, you know, I came to the UK in 2004 asking a set of questions about the church in the future. Like the questions I was asking are now mainstream, and I want to ask new questions. I mean, I personally love being on the edge, and I think that's where my calling is. So it's like, what are the questions that I need to ask now that are going to influence the next 20 years? And but you know, you have to stop doing something in order to get to that. So right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the work of Rooted Good has been amazing because we, and in some ways, it's fulfilling the imagination we had. Like everyone, well, not everyone, but okay, I'm going to just stop there and re-say this. You know, a lot of people think of us as consultants, but one of the things that we were doing when we were going through the process is we just kept being like, we're practitioners and we're collaborators. And we don't want to be on a plane all the time, just working with someone else, you know, and, you know, kind of telling people what to do and then leaving them to do the work. It was like, how do we work with more people, more intentionally, closer? Anyway, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's been super interesting that we were able to take so much of what we did as practitioners, and then we developed the Oikos Project, and we have 40 churches looking at developing social enterprises, aligning money and mission. We've created like over 12 new tools that we can like give out that we can make really readily accessible so people can download them, use them. We can connect people to one another and let people share experiences. Instead of before, it felt like everything was a bit clunky. And because of how we were operating, it was also unaffordable. So we've been able to like, you know, drive some of the costs down, make things more accessible. And we've just been having a lot of fun. Mark Sampson, Mark Elsden, and I, and then Tito Ponce joined our team. And, you know, we've been able to go, okay, who are we at our best as practitioners and as people that can actually help people both innovate and develop the path to make their ideas reality? And then at the same time, I think for me, there's been a part where I'm not having to make everything work. So I get to do the part that I'm best at. I get to be creative. I get to do a bit more dreaming. I've been able to do a lot more writing. And with that, I feel like I'm entering a new season of my own vocational life. So I don't know if that's helpful or, and again, That's right. Yeah, that's a great question. I don't even know how to answer that. Can you ask the question one more time, Blair? I want to go there. So one thing that I wrote down earlier as we were talking was there's something changed in me that is about a lightness of being. And I think I quit striving and I quit feeling like I had to achieve everything yesterday. I think my patience grew. I think I've had to learn to say no a lot more, which is really hard for me. Like I don't know. Sometimes I think it's from because I'm from a woman from the South of a certain age, but I really struggle with disappointing people and saying no. This is really interesting. This really isn't about the work of Rooted Good or maybe even Matryoshka House, but it is about the community. So one of the things that had become a tradition in London was I threw a Thanksgiving, and it was epic. It was like ongoing. It was, and we chose to do our ending ceremony and our spin out process for the community at Thanksgiving. And there were like 95 people there, right? Like it was epic. And the one thing I said was I couldn't wait to have Thanksgiving that was normal, like family style again. That's what I wanted to reclaim, even though I loved it. I have all these rich memories of Thanksgiving in London with my wider spiritual community and deepest friends, but I wanted to go back to something that felt more like family. And so the COVID was great because I didn't have to say no to anybody because we weren't allowed to have more than six people in a room together. But this year I had like 30 people call me in the week before Thanksgiving. Are you doing Thanksgiving? Have I not been invited? I'm like, no, I am doing Thanksgiving, but I am doing family style Thanksgiving. And I'm sorry, you're not invited. And it was, you know, hilarious. We had 9 people this year. And I realized like how easy it was to stick to my guns because I knew I had an image in my head of what I wanted, what was important, and what was of this season and not of the last season. And I think that what are we when we're at our best? And I would say, I think this is, you know, team is so important to me, and Mark Elston and Mark Sampson and I think we really do want everyone to flourish and to be their best and their unique gift. So I think we keep asking, okay, is this really what you want to do? Is this where you think we should be heading? Right? And how fulfilling are you finding this? So we've been asking big questions at Rooted Good, like, is our biggest gift designing and helping people innovate the future? Or is it scaling like the tools and resources we have? Well, the truth is none of us are big like marketing salespeople, right? Like we want the tools to get out there, but our biggest gift is understanding a problem and helping to solve it. And let's spend most of our time doing that because it's also work that flows out of us and gives us life and helps us have that lightness of being. So anyway, I don't know. That's where your question took me. I love the question because I'm full of hope. I'm full of hope for the church writ large, right? So I think there's a book as a church planter that I loved. I've been talking about it a lot lately. But I mean it's old, so it's written in the 90s. But it's called Sacred Cows Make Gourmet Burgers. Right, sacred cows make gourmet burgers, and I just think that it's, again, it's like when we're willing to let go the what is, something really new and beautiful can come. And I actually think it's better than we can imagine. Like, I really believe, like, that actually what's happened by letting go of Matryoshka House and see, and spinning it out into all this new work, like, there's like multiple things have happened that have built different types of communities in way bigger ways than I could have imagined, that's made the work go out. So, and that's, I think for the church, I really believe that the future is more exciting than the past. But I think we're actually, if we can let go of fear, and if we can let go of nostalgia, then I just think, and then if we can say, okay, God, we're going to trust you to lead us into the future, then, you know, we go into the communities in a different way, in a different posture. We don't exist for our own survival, but really for the love of God and the love of neighbor. And there are so many opportunities right now. And, you know, I was talking to someone this morning. I mean, people that really think, okay, churches have led food pantries for 100 years, but now let's start food co-ops and really and use them to really address food poverty and solve these problems. And I think that's the work of God in our communities, right? And they're going to take us somewhere new. And then there is a spiritual hunger. People want to know, I think young people in particular, they want to know, like, is there something to the Christian life that is actually going to change my life and change the way I live, right? That's going to make things better, right? They don't want just the religiousness of it. They want, is there anything real to it? And I just think there's so many opportunities. But I think it's going to, you know, there's pain. There's going to be some pain, and it's going to take and require some bold leadership, and it's going to look like death before it looks like life. And I just think I think that's where it's exciting. So. I think often, but you know, anything that grows and grows and grows. So there's a woman called Kate Raworth who has a book called Donut Economics. She has a TED Talk, which is worth watching. But she says, you know, anything that grows and grows and grows forever is cancer, right? It's not healthy. But we avoid pain. We avoid pain. And, you know, Blair, I wonder why, and particularly I wonder why as Christians, like, I just think the Bible is story after story of there's a lot of pain there. And why do we think we should be exempt from that? So, but yes, it's going to look like death, I think, before it looks like life. But I think that that's the only way we're going to get somewhere new. Thanks, Blair. It's been such a privilege. I really love you and Lisa, and the work of TMF is so important, I believe, in the ecosystem. And I will make my way back to Texas soon, I promise. And in fact, I'm going to be there a few times in 2022, as long as, you know, the pandemic goes in the right direction, I guess. So.